Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Now we gonna tell them. Status front. We tell them like this, yo. I'm an African. I'm an African. Yeah, y'all like that shit, right?
Not no more. Man, mine is open.
I'm an African. Let's get back to the gritty with spitting in my city. No more weak New Yorkers getting booed like Charles Smitty. My flow bar city and full of velocity. It's so real, you get knocked out, spar with me. Jaws are sticky, two drags and it hit me. The best shit got me spinning like I'm sitting on frisbees. The black Bixby, I get green to fix me. Green slam to 60, blunt chunky is Monique. Occupation, right, my aggravation. It survives, so either way I'm a blast through stagnation. With fire hotter than explosions at gas stations. They have to evacuate the town in mad faces. The fumes of the truth, a free disease nations. I'm a platoon in a booth, see a crew and I'ma face them. Every song singing, my tongue is a sword slayer. Uncle Tom rappers and crackers. Think I'm playing. I walk strong, soul prints in the pavement, panther style, cooking in my kitchen, gun in the apron. The Constitution says we can't. Why we get cases? Maybe it's the color of the skin on all our faces. Think I'm working for wages? Your mind's outrageous. Can't work where I can't speak my mind and say shit. Gotta turn the other cheek while they work on my patience. I done worked another week, my boss be laying a patient. I ain't impatient, I ain't fucking with racists. When you tell it like it is, they ask why you complaining. Why? Must be insane, in need of asylum. I see the ways of the world and you can't get it by them. Nope. Devil, you gotta fry him, he got venom inside him. Did you dirty right here, had you looking for Sodom? I'm not looking for problems, only way to resolve them. Killing my brothers with revolvers, would never resolve them. Yeah, I did this properly, verses keep getting popped on me. A man not concerned with the verse, get a drop on me. This man is concerned with assets, own property.
Yeah.
Due to seeking knowledge of self, I know it not to be.
Yeah. Black and power, more than ads and dollars. Girls hitting like airplanes when they crash the towers.
Watch out.
Mine is a conspiracy, throw it up if you hearing me. Truth and dedication mean these devils is fearing me.
Yeah.
Open the book and take a moment to look. You call a cracker your friend, but I call him a crook. Continue to spit lead till my continent is fed. Two ways to leave the battlefield, victorious or dead. Made my blood shed till the streets run red. Die in the name of freedom, independence, and bread. Call me too black, I would call it a fact. It's me and Green. Connect like train cars on the track. As a cycle or the street, for the safe mark my target. I'm a sniper on the beat. See the pig and I'm a spark em.
Get em.
Black them with something, something. Blade cutting like southern fucking. Weather pumping something. More drunk up the southern comfort. I'm in Times Square right before the apple drop. Starting the revolution. Get it popping like snapper top. You forget about your people when you at the top. Cut the head off a traitor. Execute them while the cracker watch. I'ma slay you. Jesus won't save you. Cause you declared loyalty to those who enslaved you. The sequel to Pompeii while puffing that Bombay, you a snitch, you be speaking through the wild like Kanye. Jake in his back, you can chase with the axe, remove the mask. The young Khalid Muhammad Iraq, the whole nation of black feeling safe in the trap. Your own people wanna kill you when you stating the fact. Black people sign enough to go and fight in Iraq. The same government tried to kill you by supplying you crack. Me and Dido Green, we just supplying you tracks. But it's more than just crap, the black messiah's back.
Yeah, I'm an African. We some Africans. We ain't hustlers no more, baby. Wake up, black people. Black power. Ayasa. United Front. We out.
Don't leave it to the schools. Teach the seeds, don't leave it to the fools. Or else they'll be lost like you, spending half their life trying to find the truth. Teach the seeds.
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 I am the black woman. Some know me as Queen Hatshepsut, Queen Nzinga, Harriet Tubman, and Winnie Mandela. From this day forward, I pledge my life to the liberation of my people. I will be a supportive, responsible, and loving mate. The black man will respect me, and he sees me, because I am the black woman, the original woman. mother of civilization and nurture of the black nation.
Teach the seeds, don't leave it to the fools. Teach the seeds, don't leave it to the schools. Or else they'll be zealots like you, spending half their life trying to find the truth. Teach the seeds, don't leave it to the schools. Teach the seeds, don't leave it to the fools. Or else they'll be lost like you, spending half their life trying to find the truth. Teach the seeds.
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 I pledge allegiance to my black people. I pledge to develop my mind and body to the greatest extent possible. I will learn all that I can in order to give my best to my people and their struggle for liberation. I will keep myself physically fit, building a strong body free from drugs and other substances which weaken me and make me less capable of protecting myself, my family, and my black brothers and sisters. I will unselfishly share my knowledge and understanding with them in order to bring about change more quickly. I will discipline myself to direct my energy thoughtfully and constructively rather than wasting them in idle hatred. I will train myself never to hurt or allow others to harm my black brothers and sisters, for I recognize that we need every black man, woman, and child to be physically, mentally, and psychologically strong. These principles I pledge to practice daily and to teach them to others in order to unite my people.
Teach the seeds, don't leave it to the fools. Teach the seeds, don't leave it to the schools. Or else they'll be zealots like you, spending half their life trying to find the truth. Teach the seeds, don't leave it to the schools. Teach the seeds, don't leave it to the fools. Or else they'll be lost like you, spending half their life trying to find the truth. Teach the seeds.
Black power.
Warfare.
Teach the seeds. Economics. Black science.
Teach the seeds.
It's time to go back.
Peace and Black Power family. I'll be Houdier. Welcome to another episode of Do Knowledge Radio, the place where knowledge is born. This is your host, Knowledge Born Alive. We are definitely honored and extremely privileged to have, from my vantage point and the vantage point of warriors such as myself, the epitome of the words African warrior and complimentary here in the building tonight on the show in the divine and righteous names of two supreme warrior elders who embody these principles and true examples of what we term in the African liberation struggle as servant leadership, sacrifice, and dedication. I speak of none other than Baba Nwalimu Inia Thuruthi. Here, family, that phone number to call in is 515-605-9360. Again, 515-605-9360. Press 1 with your questions or your comments. It becomes my honor and extreme privilege at this time to introduce to some and present to others the mighty warrior, African warrior, complimentary, supreme team, dream team here on Doing Knowledge Radio. I'll speak of none other than the esteemed elders, Baba and Yaba Rudy, in the building.
Greetings, Fahodiye.
Greetings, Brother Knowledge, Abibi Fahodiye.
Good to be here.
Glad to have you on. I know this is something we've been working on, you know, for some time. You know, one of them old adages are patience is a virtue. So, you know, definitely understanding what that means and, you know, having that patience. It's definitely an honor and privilege to have you both on. As I spoke about to you, Bob Rudy, the first time you were on this particular platform, you were on with the Warrior and a person I studied and trained under for some time, Minister King Shamir Shabazz. You were on this program that we did, the Black Survival and General Civilization class. And the second time you were on the platform, you were with Brother Sutek and, you know, the brothers from United Front, Teach Our Own Initiative fundraising that was happening. So, you know, third time get opportunity and get the honor and privilege of dialoguing with your warrior compliment. And Mama Yah, you know, love and honor to you. And a great deal of honor and respect, you know, when your elders come around, you tighten up. So, you know, you always greeting you with that type of spirit in your dialogue, in your presentation. So it's esteemed honor to have the opportunity to dialogue with you both on today.
Yeah, and I appreciate you bringing back the memories. It's good to hear you say Shamir Shabazz. You know, he went through a little rough time there, but he's come through it stronger than before. And I'm very, very, very glad to see him back on his natural turf doing the work that he was brought here to do. So I'm glad that that name came up.
Definitely. I heard so much of both of your stories that you shared so transparently with the people. I think an introduction would kind of be like, however, you could take as long or as little as you like to introduce yourself to the family.
Oh, wow. You
want to
go ahead and introduce us?
Oh, no, I'm going to introduce myself.
Okay.
Well, I'm Mama Yah Baruti. Since our topic is complementarity, I'll say Brother Baruti and I met in grad school back in the 80s, got married. We had one daughter who now is married with five children, but... I definitely should mention our daughter because a very big part of our story is when we found the African way, when looking for an appropriate school for her when she was in kindergarten, and that's when we were first introduced to African-centered schools, and that was the beginning of us learning that we were African. We always say when we met each other, we were pro-black. So we were clear, we loved black people. We were clear that whites were the enemy, but we didn't know that we were African. You know, we just thought of ourselves as black. But finding the African way is a major part of our story, and that was the beginning of our nation-building work. I think even though... we were teaching, but again, the difference from just being a black, you know, teaching part-time as we were in grad school and having an African-centered, and that definitely was a result in part. I think we probably would have eventually found our way, but we found it more quickly as a result of our daughter. We started... our school also as a result of our daughter. So it's interesting. I had said I would introduce myself, but it's hard to do that without telling our story. But briefly, we left Chicago in order to teach at Morehouse College. And left there... the shorter version, in order to start, well, left there, and our school starting, which started with our daughter needing an African Center High School, and there wasn't one in our vicinity, but which also us being home and teaching children in our home led Brother Baruti to also give a lot of focus to writing his books. And one of them, Complementarity, you know, became this major book that has been helpful to our people from, you know, what they're telling us, and even, you know, has become a great focus in terms of what we're doing, and even being willing to talk to couples as well, because we've recognized that the importance of complementarity. We see a lot of people doing lots of nation building work, and all of the nation building work our people are doing, it's all important, you know, educating our children, the economic piece, political piece, all of that is important, but equally important is, you know, just the root word nation. If we're building a nation, we have to have families. And for strong families with strong foundations, they start with a man and a woman coming together, committing to marriage and children. So that's a major issue. We see, you know, our people willing to fight the enemy, but my thing at this point is, okay, but are we willing, we're willing to fight against, but and we should fight against the enemy, but are we willing to fight for an African nation? And that goes to the basic. We're willing to teach our children, start businesses, all of those things, but are we willing to fight to maintain our marriages? Because definitely it's very difficult. We're about to celebrate our 33rd anniversary next year, so we're very clear, and we still have the challenges. You know, you don't get to a certain anniversary and then it's smooth sailing, so we understand how challenging it is. But at the same time, if we say that we want a sovereign African nation and we're trying to build this nation, then we have to commit and commit to establishing African unions, marriages, and and commit to having our children and staying together and raising our children. That's the part that we're having trouble with in terms of the nation. But if we're building a nation and we don't have the family foundation in place, you know, we can't do it, or we're not building a stable or sustainable nation. So, you know, this is a great topic tonight with, you know, that focus on our relationships.
Can you turn your computer so you can look at the PowerPoint? Mm-hmm. This is Nwalamu Baruti, Inia's husband, and she's pretty much stated it. I mean, it's I'm sitting here while she's talking, thinking about how to introduce myself or ourselves, but my mind keeps going to the problem that we have on the front line that I see, that I think is probably more critical than any other problem, and with its solution, most of the other problems could be resolved, because we have ample men, we have ample women to do this work, but the issues that a lot of us have, issues that a lot of us bring, and that's not to say that these issues are irrelevant, because many of them are very, very serious and need to be dealt with, both for the men and for the women. But it's sometimes it's like we recognize that we are at war. We recognize that if we're going to win this, we have to be at our full power. We have to be able to put into play all of the power that we individually have and collectively have, but don't understand the degree to which this power is increased through complementary relationships, through serious complementary relationships. I know that Europeans do. I know that Yoruba understands clearly. If we look at what they have done to us, not to say, and I'm not going to get into whether that's more important than our responsibility or our responsibility to get us out of this situation. But if we look at what they have done to us and we look at what they have spent the most time attacking, what they have convinced us should not exist, including male-female relationships, I think the thing that is most damaging to us is the idea that marriage is something that we don't want, that we don't want to have to deal with someone else's issues. And marriage involves a lot of that. Marriage involves a lot of having to deal with stuff that sometimes you don't feel like dealing with. You know, we're supposed to be honest here. I would like to be able to leave this planet knowing that I have given the warriors the best truthful assessment of all our possible situations that I can, so that the things that I've dealt with, the things that Anya and I have dealt with, would be more manageable, not because they're easier, but because you are aware of their existence. And, of course, we should know that complementary relationships are difficult. They're supposed to be difficult. And, of course, that is the point that we have to remember. The reason why, in my opinion, the reason why we have been reduced to the point where we see marriage and complementarity in the sense of it being a lifelong venture between a man and a woman is because it is the most strengthening aspect of our lives. I say we're getting ready to celebrate 33 years together. And these have been 33 difficult but extremely rewarding, but still very difficult years. And I defy any, well, not defy, I dare any frontline couple who's been together for 10 years or more to come on and challenge me to say that, oh, this was easy. I have yet to meet a complimentary couple who's on the front line who wanted to talk about how easy it is and all you have to do is go on a date, you know, once a month and you know, whatever it is, throw some roses and some chocolate, you know, whoever's direction, and everything is going to be perfectly fine and no disagreements and no major issues, no nothing. No, that's not the truth. It's difficult. But what we have to remember in that, because life is difficult, what we have to remember in that relative to the power that could best be exercised on the front line, we have to bring the best of what we are to the front line. We have to bring the best of what we are to building our educational institutions. We have to bring the best of what we are to establishing entrepreneurship, our businesses. We have to bring the best of what we are to grassroots political education. We have to bring the best of what we are. And Yoruba knows that you can defeat that before it even gets started by removing people from the challenges that make them the strongest. Marriage strengthens you more than, and I'm saying marriage, but we talk about long-term complementarity. Everybody may not fall into that category, but if you are there with an individual and you two are working together and you two are in a complementary relationship, then as far as I'm concerned, that's marriage, however we want to define it. There is no other thing that I have had to deal with in my life. And I'm not unusual in respect. I had to deal with drugs, I had to deal with alcohol, cigarettes, decades of horrible food, menticide, all the rest of this. I've encountered nothing in my life that's as difficult as marriage. But at the same time, I have not dealt with anything that is as rewarding and strengthening for me, to me, as marriage. So to me, that's how we should approach this. We should, to me, warriors, they see challenges. They're the ones who are courageous enough to do the work. They're not the ones who are operating out of fear or ignorance. They're not the ones that see the enemy at work or see the enemy coming or can see this quote-unquote overwhelming threat against us and find a way to get around it or a way to not have to deal with it or put on blinders. Warriors are the ones who, what is the African proverb that says, if somebody's, I'm paraphrasing this, but if somebody's, if a spear is getting ready to go into your chest, then you charge toward it. Or they say about the mother is the one that grabs the knife by the blade. See, that's warriors to me. We don't when it comes to challenges, especially when it comes to the most difficult challenges in our life, we're the ones who have been self-selected, even though we know that this is part of our spirit. But we have decided that we're going to take on the fight for African people. We have made that choice. We have decided that this is something that we don't have a choice in. The what is it? Courage is in the what is it? The fruit of decision on y'all. What is it? Courage is the fruit of a decision made in the heart. So we've made that decision in the heart, whether we've articulated well or not. We see something wrong, we go to solve it. We go to straighten it up. Warriors don't think in terms of consequences so much. We think in terms of correction. Whatever needs to be corrected, which requires us to be stronger than anybody else. It doesn't require us to be better. It doesn't require us to you know, act like we are going to be running roughshod over people. It just means that we have chosen this as our life's vocation, to do this work, and we recognize it as work, and we recognize that in many cases we're not going to be rewarded for this work. We do it because it's the right thing to do. And in doing what's right thing to do in an atmosphere, in an environment that is completely and totally against your kind, as well as completely and totally against the idea of you becoming anything close to anybody sovereign, then you have to be stronger than anybody. You have to stay consistently stronger than anybody. You need to be with somebody who is strong so that you all can match metal for metal. I don't know of anything else that strengthens warriors more than marriage. So I don't have, you know, some people have regrets in that process. And I think in a lot of cases it's because we entered into it with the wrong idea about what it was. Sometimes we enter into it and we assume that the whole process, the whole thing is supposed to be like the period of infatuation. We've misdefined romance in a way that does not fit our spirit. And in fact, we've been using the word romance is a problem. We should be using other words, African words like Krokro, which I think is very fitting because it talks about a spirit, not just about some capitalist materialistic thing or giving, which is supposed to prove your worth. We have to, I think we need to rethink the whole concept of marriage, how we come into it. You're not dating per se. You're looking for a compliment. You're looking for commitment, and you come into a relationship with the mentality that I am going to be committed. I'm not looking for a date if I'm a man. I'm not looking for a date. I'm looking for a wife, period. I'm not looking for anything but a wife, and I'm not here to play games because marriage is not something to play with, and we are at war, and I need something and somebody that is going to make me better prepared for this, and together we're going to be able to deal with this enemy more effectively than individually. So when I was listening to Inia and trying to think about, well, how to introduce myself, I kept thinking about why I am effective at what I do. And I know that I'm not the best in the world, but one of the main reasons why I am effective is because I have somebody here who understands exactly what's going on, understands what we have to do, understands funks. One of the elders in the community posted a song which I hadn't heard in years. I was so excited about that song. I hadn't heard it in years, and I know the students in NEI are sick and tired of me playing it because I'm playing it every day at lunchtime, full blast. But he posted the song because, and in posting the song, he made a point of, you know, he's at the tail end of a funk. And I know a lot of young folks don't know what that means, but it's if you can describe it, it's close to depression. You are not quitting what you're doing. You're not stopping the work, but recently within the last few days or weeks or months, it's just added up. Too much bad stuff has crossed your path. You've seen too many African folks who are in pain. You've seen too many African folks who are wallowing in their mental side. You've seen too much tragedy recently, and it's gotten to you. So you go into a semi-depressed state, if you will, where you're still working, but your heart isn't in it the way that it should be because what you've been looking at is depressing you. But I'm listening to this elder speaking, and I know he's not going anywhere. I know that if he lost his job, he's not going anywhere. I know that if he saw 20 times as much of what he's been seeing that led to this in the next week, he's not going anywhere because I know who he's married to. And I know that if he decided to go someplace else, he'd have all kinds of problems because she's not going there with him because she's on the front line too. And her job is going to be to drag him back to his senses if he decided to go in that direction, which I would seriously doubt. So that there are benefits that we don't think about. And I don't want to belabor this point anymore, but there's our ancestors said, we get so lost in this European cultural stuff, we forget who we are, even though we're claiming who we are. Our ancestors said, love is not something that you find at the beginning of a relationship. That's what I tell folks all the time. You want to find your compliment, do your work. And your compliment should be doing the work, too, because that'll tell you a lot about what you're really about in the first place. They say that love is something that you come into with time with this person. That's when you come to understand what love is. In the West, there's really no understanding of love. There is a misdefinition of it, just like there's a misdefinition of friends in social media, the concept of friends. So the idea of love isn't based on something that's time tested, that has to be worked at, that has to go through sometimes seemingly more difficult times than easy times. It's based upon this simple-minded infatuation. It's based upon this instant lust thing and the excitement that's supposed to stay there forever, and it doesn't. Folks, young and old, need to listen to Anita Baker's song "Fairy Tales." There's a lot of deep stuff in that song, Anita Baker's "Fairy Tales," and that speaks in a way to our tradition, where you find out later that this person. You get to see over the years how this person works, how they think. You get to see that's another phenomenal aspect about it, I guess. You really get to see their genius. You don't know how intelligent the person is who you are with or how dumb the person is who you are with until you have seen them at work for years. You've seen them handle tragedy. You've seen them handle difficulty. You've seen them handle extreme difficulty. You've seen them handle assault. You've seen them handle joy. You've seen them handle all kinds of things, and you're able to really see what kind of person that is. In the West, impressions are so important. So image is so important. So we base our whole judgment on the person based upon how they dress or how they walk or how they talk now. And in this society, that makes for perfect gamesmen. Because anybody who knows how to talk a good game can convince somebody else that there's something that they absolutely are not. They study the person who they're trying to get into bed or whatever, and they figure out where their heart is at, and they manipulate that so that they come off looking like somebody that they aren't. It reminds me very much of Marimba Ani's discussion of Yorugu in terms of their rhetorical ethic. where they find out what you're about. They find out your spiritual beliefs. They find out about your sense of morality and your ethics, and then they pretend that that's what they're about until they disarm you, and then they destroy you. The same thing happens in relationships. It's like we're bad imitators of what Europeans are masters at, and we've taken it to the level of interpersonal relationships. So I guess that's going to be my introduction of me.
Wow, that was a long intro, Brother Baruti.
very excellent intro.
Thank you.
Very important and very key from what both of you expressed so truthfully is this transparency that exists within both of your stories. I had to do the thing where I listened to one Baba's lecture, then one Inya's lecture, and then back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And there's an affection, and there's a study, like a tremendous study. There's things that both of you have communicated that I know are true just from listening to you speak, you know, and just to hear you speak about one another. There's not a time where you're going to get a Baba lecture where Inya's not mentioned, and vice versa. And to even know, like, you could feel the presence of the other one there in that manner. You understand what I'm saying? Like, so there are things that are expressed in, you know, conversation. I'm back like, okay, I get a front row seat to another class that's going on. I'm like, this is beautiful. And to speak to that level of commitment. There's one example that I point to. Dr. Betty Shabazz spoke about Malcolm, and she said that she always loved Malcolm. But she said February 13, 1965 was the day that she fell in love with Malcolm. She said that their house was firebombed, if anyone knows historically that date, February 13, 1965, a week before his assassination. Their house was firebombed. She said Malcolm got her out of the house. She was pregnant with twins. He went back into the house, got all of the children out. She said this man disappeared into the smoke and came back out with something, and every time he came out of the smoke and fire with flames on him, just a little house coat, and you know he had his rifle, but he got all of the children out to safety and went back in to get some other things, and then made sure that they were in to safety, and he stood outside waiting for the enemies that would come to try to finish them off. She said, in that moment, she said she always loved him. She said, but in that moment, she fell in love with the man that was with her. You know, so in that particular space, to be able to share those experiences and then to know a fire that did not claim her life, 32 years later, she would be subjected to a fire. Seeking to save a Malcolm, you know, as the story was told, 32 years later. And she would be subjected to her transition because of wounds over 80% or more of her body engulfed in those flames.
Right.
So very relatable experience. Mm-hmm. And I believe our brother, Ruff Mike, from what's being reported, transitioning today. So rise of power to that newly made ancestor, and love and honor to his family as well, and those Africans among us who have been affected by that.
Absolutely.
He will be missed.
Mm-hmm.
And those who are warriors know that they now have a little piece of additional work to do.
Because
his work can't stop. It's got to be continued, or we're not who we say we are. It's like, and he's going to be missed beyond words. I saw so many warriors today, so I can't say anything right now. This is not real. It doesn't register, you know, that he's gone on to the ancestral realm. It's just not registering. And when you can say something like that about somebody, then, and of course I knew him. Eniyah did also. When you can say something like that about somebody, then their power and the work that they've done is really not describable right now. You know, maybe later, but right now it's not. But his name needs to be said daily by all of us, and not just to be saying it, but to remind ourselves that this beautiful warrior left us a legend, and each of us has got a little piece of that, and we can't neglect that piece, and that makes us stronger. And of course, he's going to be doing the work where he's at, so it's strengthening everywhere. I was going to say also about Betty Shabazz and her realization. Like she described it in a nutshell. You don't know the person until a crisis occurs. You don't know the person until there is a major test. No matter how much you may think you do, until there is actually something that takes them beyond the ability to consciously think and figure out exactly how they're going to do such and such, so that it comes out perfectly. When you get to see them act, or for those who really aren't ready to react, then you really get a bird's eye view of the quality of that person's character. You get a bird's eye view of their strength, both the men and the women. You get to see who they really are. And that's something that is overlooked in a major way in this society, because they do not want us to get to know each other. They do not want us to have a deep understanding of each other. They do not want us to sit down and have serious conversations other than arguments, because arguments in many cases, even though some of them are fruitful, arguments in many cases, they don't lead to anything but other arguments. So for us to be able to sit down and to really do work together, to have conversations together, doing work and otherwise, for us to engage, I'll say prospective or potential warriors and warriors in training in intelligent conversations, and have to explain to them answers that they've asked for without a script, then you really get to see what the person is about. You get to see how their mind works. When a crisis occurs, something happens with an elder, something happens with a brother or sister in the community, there is a call for assistance. Something as simple as, for warriors, some elder needs her lawn mowed. Okay, and that's not something that needs to be requested. People, warriors, should see things like that and immediately do. That tells you a lot. There's a difference. There was a brother out in California who had a organization that worked with particular young boys. Mostly, well, almost all young boys. There were some young girls there, but mostly young boys, and that was his purpose. And it had grown into a fairly sizable organization, and I got to meet him here and asked him, you know, how do you pick volunteers? And this was before we started having a volunteer or two at Akabin, which is a whole other piece of a discussion. But I asked him, how did he pick his volunteers, you know, to work with his young men, because they didn't get paid. And he said, you know, because of their popularity, they were getting more and more people who were coming by to ask to volunteer. And he said it's simple. he said he doesn't, they come to him and he just essentially ignores them. And he said those who start asking a bunch of questions about what to do and who needs help and blah, 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 he said those he asked not to come back. He said the ones he asked to come back are those who look around, see where there's a problem or see something needs to get done or see someone sitting there having difficulty with their homework or somebody who's trying to learn how to dribble a ball or trying to learn how to use a pool cue or what have you and immediately goes to assist or goes sees a fight and goes to break it up or at least trying to find out why they were fighting. And those are the ones that stay, and those are that's where you can see. So I could see there. If I'm at work, I should be able to judge to some degree the quality of my potential compliment's character based upon how she responds to certain duties, requirements, incidents at that work. And that's something that we don't do from the beginning. And I know that, you know, of course, Betty Shabazz had done that long before that, but when you're with somebody for years, you get to experience things of different magnitudes in terms of the difficulty and danger and as well as ease, sense of obligation and duty. And those are the things that bring love. Okay, initially you get brought with infatuation, and I think that's part of the process. I mean, you want to be able to look at who you're with. You want to wake up in the morning and see this face and not run. You know, I'm not trying to be funny with that, but you do want to have someone who you like to look at. So the package is important, and people have different conceptions of what packaging is. And of course, too many of us are caught up in Urugu's definition as was given to us as what is beautiful and what is worthy of our time and what we should look at and what we should ignore, what we should consider pretty and what we should consider ugly. And, of course, most of the ugly fell on the African side. So I do think it's important. The package is important, you know, to some degree. But that shouldn't be the most important thing. When we talk about that here with the youngsters, you know, and they're like fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, and they're beginning to develop serious interest in the other sex, I should say the complementary sex, and so one of them will turn around, and one of the guys will turn around and watch one of the girls as she walks away. So I corner him. I say, "What are you looking at?" And, you know, he's all embarrassed, and he starts laughing, tries to play it off. And I said, "No, seriously, what are you looking at? Why are you looking at that? Why do you like that?" And, you know, they're still in their little embarrassed mode. And I make them take out a piece of paper and tell them to fold it in half the long way. And I tell them to write a list of 10 qualities that they want in their prospective husband or wife. And almost every time, almost every list, most of it is physical stuff or material stuff. And we sit down and we talk about it, you know, and the qualities of black women and the qualities of black men in terms of how we look naturally and all the rest of that. But I say, you all are still focused on the material and the physical just like the way you've been trained. I said, what happened if you found this person who, you know, looked exactly the way that you wanted them to look? They had the exact perfect abilities. You know, they looked good. They looked good, and they liked you. I said, and you got married to this person, and the same week the person got into an auto accident which completely and totally deformed their face. Maybe even crippled them, made them paraplegic, maybe anything. I said, what happened to that thing you call love? And we're so caught up, we don't think about future stuff. We don't think about why we're doing this. I'm doing this because I love you. No, I'm doing this because I want to be with you, because you are a warrior, and we want to build a family that's going to produce warriors who are going to grow up to look for warriors so that we can continue to move African people towards sovereignty. That's why I want you. That should be our level of commitment. It needs to be that strong. Anything less, as far as I'm concerned, is weak. You're just playing. And we don't have time for playing. We've played enough. We are in a very, very, very bad situation right now. We can sugarcoat it all we want to, but we're in an extremely difficult situation now. And we only have two choices. We can either become vanquished and quit, accept the loss, and go on about the business of being subintegrated into whiteness until we disappear, because you're not going to get their love because they don't have it. Or you can decide that you are your ancestors, that you're going to hook up with somebody who knows that she is your ancestor, and you all are going to fight to your last breath to attain African sovereignty for African people, and you're going to do it together because you know you do it better together than individually.
Got a surprise for y'all. Warrior that wishes to speak to you both. So I'm going to bring on this warrior that we spoke of earlier today in the conversation. Mr. Kingston and Shabazz is in the building.
Right.
Bibi Fahodye.
Bibi Fahodye, warrior. Good to hear your voice.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Great to hear you, Butch.
Good.
Mama Ya. The Black Home on the Knowledge Radio. And I'm humbly honored to be here with two of the most profound manifestations of true African sovereignty and liberation for African people. Baba, I must personally thank you for your support for me as I was behind enemy lines. And it really gave me so much more energy. It gave me so much more drive and motivation to continue to teach these brothers in the belly and to strive daily to be that revolutionary, that African revolutionary example. And your teachings have basically put a shining on my new coat of armor. So it just added on the supreme reflection. And as I recall in the letter, I had said to you that I would continue to carry on these teachings the same way as I carried on the legacy and the teachings of Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. So I'm personally honored for your support, and it just took me to a whole nother level mentally, spiritually, and liberationarily. So I'm still studying. I'm actually on homosexuality and the feminization of the African male.
Okay.
So I'm still building on that, but it's something you touched on, and Complementarity was a wonderful book. And family, if y'all do not have it, I'm going to tell you, you can't be a revolutionary without it. Because marriage, as Baba said, is something far, far more greater than what this cracker have showed us. See, we're so used to listening to Urugu tell us how to love, tell us who to love, tell us when to love, tell us what to love, and to actually tell us what love is according to his perspective, which is really worth nothing at all. But we have been taught how to love by our enemies. So when the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, love is the highest degree of understanding, there is a process to get to the understanding. So Baba, on page 7, as you was talking about romance, and you said here in complementarity, page 27, love and happiness, you said romance is a big part of the grand deception. It is glorified in the West as essential and normal to the development of healthy male-female relationships. Of course, we must bear in mind that normal, healthy male-female relationships in Western society are rife with aggression, violence, betrayal, and division. This has always been so for them. The illusion of peaceful, loving complementarity that romance temporarily brings is what sexual intercourse is what makes sexual intercourse between males and females possible for them. For it allows a moment of peace within which these individuals can safely sexually ravage each other. In Western relations between males and females, domination and sex in that order are the foremost priority. So we have been basically, in so many words, we have been duped. We have been duped. And it all goes back to the breakup and the destruction of the black family. So this book just even made me look at myself. And a lot of things I was right on point with. And then a lot of things in other areas I had some growing and developing to do. Acknowledging that, and that was the first stage, that was the first process. So we as Africans have to start, as I say, doing self-realization to born self-manifestation. And our complement has to reflect that of which we say we live, study, and fight for. And it kills me, and I'm sure Baba and Mama Yah, I'm sure y'all have seen this many of times, where you might have a brother who's, you know, super warrior minded, he's super conscious. And then when you see his woman, you see his woman, he's just scratching your head trying to figure out what's going on here.
Oh yeah.
So now we're looking at, again, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, if you want to tell a man by his works, look at his woman.
There you go.
Look at his woman. So I'm honored to be able to see directly in front of me what true African warrior couples look like. And trust and believe, I know it ain't easy. And you ain't gonna lie to me and tell me it is. That's definitely not gonna happen. I know it ain't easy. So a question that I have. What is your views on the science of polygamy? Is it for us, or will it harm us?
Well, I'd like to address that question. In fact, at our last complementarity conference, we have an annual complementarity conference here in Atlanta. We skipped last year, unfortunately. Baba was having major back issues, but we had a panel discussion on that topic. And that was my idea based upon seeing the growing interest in it in our community, and I have concerns, but my thinking on it, yes, it did exist, and I've read that it didn't originate. Some people say it may have existed. It did not originate in Africa. I don't know the ins and outs of that discussion, but I do know when it did exist, there were rules and regulations that went with that, and it was the exception and not the rule. And part of that was the man had to be able to afford multiple wives, and there was protocol as to how additional wives were chosen. You know, particular roles for the first wife, and you know, it was something that was agreed upon in the society. So there was village support. Now, and I am aware in for African people today, of course, you know, it continues on the continent to whatever degree, and that we are seeing it so in this country. Now, I know that it probably works best in those communities where it is accepted, because every marriage, like it takes a village to raise a child, couples need to be a part of a village. It needs to be supported. So I know that in Muslim communities where it's, you know, accepted, in the Hebrew, the Black Hebrew Israelites, there's support for it, as well as Osar Oset. But I've also talked to different women who have been in those communities, read books where, you know, I think people are looking, okay, this is some magic solution, that they are the examples where it works well, when it has worked well, because they have the village support, as well as if you have protocol being followed. And that's what, when it's structured in those communities, there's certain protocols. So there are guidelines that people have to follow. What I see going on in the larger conscious community, you have people forming these relationships, and they don't know, there is no protocol. And I've had sisters tell me, one sister, a friend of mine, told me an issue that she has, and she's Rastafarian, that in that community, brothers will start a relationship unbeknownst to the woman, the sister that they're with, and impregnates and or presents the baby already born, and basically she's forced to either decide to stay in the relationship, and, you know, she has not agreed upon this, so it's done surreptitiously, and, of course, that's not righteous. And even in, for people who are interested, I will recommend a book that I read that looks at it. The author's a black female professor at Georgia State, who she's in favor of it, but she presents a scholarly approach where it's not just a book promoting it. That's the reason why I like it, because if it were just one-sided, I would not recommend it. But she interviewed people in the Osar Oset, Muslim, and Black Hebrew Israelites who are in polygamous relationships in terms of the pros and cons. And part of the cons that were mentioned were men again, being surreptitious about it. Even if they're Muslim, but without discussing it with the first wife, just on his own, taking a second wife, then, which puts her in the position of having to stay, you know, making a choice. So when it's done unrighteously, you know, definitely that's in just even in marriage between two people. If it's not built on a righteous foundation, there are going to be challenges. So I understand the need for it, unfortunately. I mean, I'm blessed to have been married 30-some years, but I'm very aware of all the single sisters in the community, many of them with children, and, you know, the reality of what's going on with our men. You know, they say all the good ones are married, but we have, of course, 1 million black men incarcerated. We have a lot of our men involved in criminal activity. We have a growing number, unfortunately, of men in our community who don't want to be men, you know, who are joining the sexual perversion of homosexuality, or they're into, if they're not homosexual, they're into other European perversions that, you know, sisters who have certain standards would not be willing to participate in. And, of course, let me not leave out the large segment of black men who do not want to marry a black woman, who, you know, are exclusively black males versus black men. Baba corrected me, Madasi. Thank you. But so, you know, we have, what, hundreds of thousands of black men who are married to non-black women. So our sisters are being challenged. And what I see is, you know, people, and, you know, we don't want to ever be in a desperate situation, but I've, on our panel, you know, we had a couple of sisters who, one of them was a Hebrew Israelite, one wasn't, and she's not a member of any of the three groups that I mentioned who are, you know, polygamy is acceptable in that group, but she saw firsthand experience of a couple who it worked beautifully, not a couple because it was another sister, but a polygamous family for whom it worked well, and having seen that makes her open to it. And of course, the sister who's with the black Hebrew Israelites, she's seen it work well. You know, it is. So she's seen lots of couples because in her community, you know, that's very much a part of the community. But both of them also, of course, have, you know, they are knowledgeable of cases where it's not. So I would say, you know, it really, I don't recommend it. At the same time, I wouldn't tell a sister, oh, absolutely, you shouldn't do this. I think it would really have to be on a case-by-case basis. But I don't like that sisters are being coerced into, you know, polygamous relationships. But I really see for, you know, those sisters who are not married, they're really between a rock and a hard place. But I wouldn't tell anyone, even in terms of marriage, I definitely recommend marriage as a good thing, but it's not something you should jump into. You know, you need to be very spiritually in tune, do your research, and in the same way, you should carefully choose in a monogamous marriage. It's something to not to be entered into lightly, and I would say any sisters who are interested to read the book, and I never gave the title. It's called We Want for Our Sisters What We Want for Ourselves. To definitely, if you're interested, to read that book, but as well as if you know polygamous families, to do some research beforehand. But I also think that's something, if a man is interested in that before he gets married, he needs to inform the sisters. So, you know, otherwise don't start off with your deception of, okay, we're going to get married, and then you spring it on her now that she's married, she has children, to be what we should be in all of our relationships, honest about if that's something that you want, so you give her the opportunity to make an informed decision. And even if that was not the plan beforehand and it's something that he becomes interested in, again, you know, being totally upfront and righteous in your dealings.
The only thing I could add to that, and I will say that I've, you know, known a number of families where there were, I don't personally know of any where there were multiple husbands, but I know of a good number where there were multiple wives. And in that group, there were some very successful ones. And in fact, in my experience, I've seen about as many successful ones as I've seen unsuccessful ones. The ones that were most successful, all of them didn't have that village structure, but some of them did, and that benefited enormously. But what I found among the unsuccessful ones were what Enia was talking about, and the contradiction where we're talking about we're African and we're creating this polygamous relationships because we're African, but we're not following African guidelines, because those guidelines would make us more accountable. Those guidelines would make it a little more difficult. And for many of us, and I don't call them men, I call them grown males, they just want to play. They don't want to take on the responsibilities, whether they are married to one person or they're married to multiple individuals. There's a difference between, well, for me, in our tradition, to be a man, and I can only talk to men because that's what I am. To be a man required a certain level of maturity, a certain level of responsibility, a certain level of accountability, period. And if you didn't have those things, then you weren't considered to be a man. Versus in the West, it's like this friend thing, just like this love thing. Because you turn 18, 19 years of age, then you're considered to be a man. And too many of the, I'll say, Africans who I meet are simply grown males. They're not men because it has certain requirements. In our tradition, there was no title, there was no name, there was no position, no privilege that you were granted that was not based upon you earning it. In the West, you know, you're born. So we're calling Europeans humans, and even if they came from the same biological stock, they wouldn't qualify because their behavior indicates that they are not, based upon the definition of what it means to be human. So we have been brought up in a society, because I shouldn't say culture, that's a whole other, because it's European culture, it's not just American culture. We've been brought up in a society that has taught us that if you can fake the funk, then you all is good. If you can pretend to be something, or if you can act like you're something, then it automatically makes you you. Just like white boys walking around sporting what they're calling locks, or white girls switching nothing, pretending that they're doing African dance. Okay, these are things that are earned. And one of the traditions that we don't follow, which we find widespread on the African continent traditionally when it comes to polygamy, is that he doesn't choose who the wife is going to be. The first wife or the wives, they pick who the next wife is going to be. He doesn't have say in that. And that's part of our play here. We want to pick the first one, play, and then continue to play and play and play. And I can understand why that creates a problem. But in our tradition, if we're going to call ourselves African, if we're going to do this but not call ourselves African, then enjoy. I'm not concerned with the folks who want to play. I'm not concerned with Negroes. I'm not concerned with lost souls. I'm not concerned with pseudo-Africans. I'm not concerned with anything but African warriors, because the other people take too much time, and I'm not here to teach people who don't want to understand. But for those who do want to understand, who are warriors, who do have the capacity to understand what it means to be African, and if they're claiming to be African warriors, then they're supposed to be modeling our ancestors. That's baseline. Then they have to follow the rules, the etiquette, as our ancestors did, because our ancestors created those rules over thousands of generations for solid reason. They didn't do it because they just felt like playing. They were building family because they were building nation. And one of the rules that we have to follow if we're going to do that, and it shouldn't be any problem, is that she picks who the next wife is going to be. And in all of these places that I have read, I can't say that's all period, but all places I have read, she even initiated the discussion of having an additional wife. He didn't initiate that. She initiated that. But here, she's not initiating it. He's initiating it, and often he's initiating it for reasons other than he's trying to build an empire. In some cases, I saw he's just trying to build up his harem. He's trying to build up his workers so that he essentially can do nothing. That, to me, is extremely problematic, and I know that that's not all of them, but it's enough to catch our attention. I'm not saying something that no one has seen. And that, to me, is amazing.
So he's setting up a line of concubines.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And if we're going to, and that is a way, I mean, obviously it's a way that we can begin to work on solving this problem of our family structure, but we have to do it the way our ancestors did it, or we're simply, you know, playing these games. And in the West, that's what that game is about. It's not about polygamy, it's about playing. It's about seeing how many children, you know, you can spread around the world. It's about seeing if you can go, you know, every night having sex, whatever, two or three, four times, whatever. So you can play. You got your own personal playground. Okay, that fits in, of course, with Jacob Carruthers. Jedi Shimsu Yehudi made the point about the idea of work in the West. Well, within the Western mind, work, the real work, is you being in a position to have other people do your work for you, not you doing the work. That's like lower-level work. The real work in the Western mind is you having other people do your work for you. And that's extremely problematic in terms of our traditions for multiple reasons. And the same thing applies here. In a number of these cases, you're having grown males who are trying to build a workforce out of women. And something's problematic about that scenario. And again, that's not to say that that's the case all the time, because I know of some polygamous relationships that work, that are balanced, that are based on our traditions. And they're working fine. So I don't have anything against the idea of polygamy, or I'd have something against our ancestors. And I wanted to say to you, my brother, it was an honor staying connected with you. I guess one of these days we really need to sit down, because the first time that we met, I essentially watched you, which is what I do with most warriors who I meet, whose reputation precedes them, because I want to see for myself if that's what this person is really about. I can make my own judgment on that. And I have been in awe of your warriorship since that first contact. So I wasn't providing an undeserved service, and I know that you would have done exactly the same thing for me. I have no doubt in my mind whatsoever that you would have done exactly the same for me. So it was an honor to be able to make that journey a little easier and a little more productive for you.
Habibi Fahodiye. Thank you, Baba. Thank you, Mama.
Habibi Fahodiye. Thank you.
If I can say something else. We don't have forever, but I wanted to make one unsolicited point. Again, we are in bad shape. Again, we are at war. And if we recognize that we're at war, then we have to act accordingly. Europeans are turning these cities into forts through the process of regentrification because they realize that they're under assault, and that's what they do when they're under assault. They create forts. We recognize that we're at war, but many of us don't act accordingly. We talk about it, but we don't actually build what needs to be done. Our children don't need to be in those institutions that are killing their minds for 1 minute. And if we continue to complain about it for a week, that's an additional week of mis- and diseducation for these children. We have to have, because we are at war, we have to have parameters. We have to have parameters for our families, for our communities, for our complementary relationships. There have to be boundaries that are established, and then you can work with what gets inside to see what needs to be sifted out on the front line. So, like here for Eni and I, the basic boundaries are no Euro, no Negroes, no homos, no Euros, and no promos. That's automatic. If you fit in any of those categories, you don't come into our space. Period. Now, we work out the other details with folks that may sneak in with other issues, and then they get routed out. But those are the parameters. That doesn't get past the perimeter of our safe, sacred African space. So for me, when we're looking for compliments or we're assessing what it is that we're going to be looking for in terms of a compliment, to me, there are at least four parameters in addition to those. Because if the person who you are looking at to commit yourself to has homos who are friends, I zero tolerance. They're not playing with us. I don't understand why we're playing with them. Yes, I understand that people have sexual issues coming up in this reality. But people have to be willing to change or they become a problem which distracts from us doing our work, especially the teaching of our children. So we have to have So whoever you're interested in, they can't be, I got homo friends, I got Negro friends, I got Euro friends. No, I got promo friends. No, no, zero tolerance. You can't do anything about the people who are in your family. And I think that family is extremely important as long as they do not disrespect our African way. Do not disrespect my name. Do not disrespect my attire. Do not disrespect what you see on my walls in my house. Don't make fun of it. Don't try to turn my child away from me. Those things will get you isolated permanently from my space. Inia's a teeny bit different on that, but she is still clear on that point relative to me. So that is in terms of the people who are selected to be your friends and your associates, who you move with, who you ride with, et cetera, then those four things should be clear. No Negroes, no homos, no promos, no Euros, period. In terms of compliments, in addition to that, because this person is the closest person to you. As I say with folks when they're trying to pretend that they're African, even though they sleeping with trash.
Crackers.
Even though they're sleeping with trash, I'm saying, who you sleep with is who you protect first. Your greatest loyalty lies with who you sleep with, period. So don't talk to me about you African, but you got this string beside you in bed. That's a contradiction that is insurmountable. So my original point, within compliments, you two should see eye to eye. And we remember, Negro compliments see eye to eye. They're Negroes. And they see eye to eye accordingly. Okay. So I don't understand why warriors can't. Both individuals should know who the enemy is. Both individuals should know who the enemy is, who should understand the definition, and it should be visible in what they say, where they are, what they do, all of that. both individuals should believe in rearing African children. I don't want to have any children because that's not African. I don't want to have family. That's not African. I want to go to go back home and take a vacation in England. That's not African. Okay, those things don't fit in any way, shape, form, or fashion. But they have to believe in rearing African children. And if both individuals, neither individual, can actually have children biologically, then in addition, well, then every African child in the community, every child who's a warrior and trained in the community should be their child. And those who have children, of course, every African child in the community who has a potential to be African should be their child. But that should be one of the four things that they see eye to eye on. Believe in rearing, which is different than raising. Rearing, which means that I politically educate my child too. I don't hope that they get it through something that I say on the side or don't teach them about what it means to African and what happened to us because it may hurt their little feelings while they're sitting there playing these games, cutting off people's heads, arms, with prostitutes and everything else in it. Believe in rearing African children to understand who they are as Africans. Third, humbly accept the warrior role. You can't have egos caught up in relationships. It doesn't work like that. I'm not more important than you. You're not more important than me. Now, I might have greater skill in this area, and you might have greater skill in that area or greater knowledge. And we, of course, take our life and the tasks that are in our lives and divide them amongst ourselves based upon our skills and knowledge in different areas. But nothing I do makes me superior to you, and nothing you do makes you superior to me. African people are humble by nature. That doesn't mean that we take crap from anybody, but we're humble by, can I say crap? We're humble by nature. Okay? We are respectful for each other. You can't have a communal situation without that. You can't have a communal situation without trust. If you have a communal situation, if you have a bunch of people who for whatever reason lie and can't trust each other, you don't have a community. And last, both individuals must prize a victorious vision. Both individuals must prize a victorious vision. And these were, I have to give credit where credit is due, these were primarily derived from Molefe Tete-Asante's book, Afrocentricity.
Bob and Mama Yah, you could get them back. We did have an agreed upon time that we said we were going to speak, so we're approaching that time right now. So I just wanted to quickly remind everybody of an event that they have coming up on April the 14th, the SAFO conference, and I'll give you that information real quick. Pride Movement of Atlanta presents 21st Century Black Survival Conference, April 14, 2018. Spirituality, Culture, and Survival. They have Baba Ashra Kwesi, Baba Rudy, and the Irritated Genius Southeast coming together to have this successful conference. Doors open at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Address is 946 Ralph Abernathy Boulevard, Atlanta, Georgia. For information, email atlanta@gmail.com. That's, you know, the abbreviation for Straight Black Pride Movement, Atlanta, at gmail.com for information, tickets, vendor spot, any of that. information. Definitely honored to have had the Warriors on. Like I said, we had them on for an appointed time, and we are approaching that time, so in respect and honor to their time constraints and, you know, our level of commitment and respect for our elders, we're going to close the show out. Love and honor to everybody who tuned in. Y'all want to check any of the archives out? This is our first show of the year, 712 shows. Y'all can check us out, www.blogtalkradio.com/DotKnowledgeRadio. That's DotKnowledgeRadio. Check us out at our hub site, our e-commerce site, DotKnowledgeUniversity.com. Y'all can check us out and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Do Knowledge Radio on YouTube. We'll be discussing Black Panther this Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with KT the Arch Degree. And also, y'all can follow the show on Twitter at KnowledgeBorn15. Again, at KnowledgeBorn15. So, that one said, peace, love, Black Power, be for who the eight. And see you next time.
The greatest day of my life is the day you were born. I was there sharing on, all praise to your mom. Ready to raise up a Marcus Garvey or a Nat Turner. Identified our enemies and kept it black for you, but still taught you how to walk, ride a bike, talk, value life, self-defense, hence a strong sense of pride. Took you everywhere I went to treat women with respect. No God in the sky, cause you God in the flesh. Taught you how to stay fresh, clothes clean, proper hygiene. Basically, how to be just like me. Believe nothing, question everything. Find facts and accept your blessings every day. Be a leader, good isn't good enough. Be a reader, book after book, fill your brains with jewels, not full of junk. My Messiah, I honor and place no one above you. Not even your mama, just know your Baba loves you. Your daddy loves you. 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 Your Baba loves you. It didn't work out. Me and your mama grew apart. My young heart, just know that it wasn't your fault. It went from every day, every weekend to once in a while. The stress get the best of me, but it's worthwhile to see you smile. The older you get, I have to compete with the poltergeists and lies to see. Bite my tongue and be the bad guy in my family. I wanna see you grow to contribute to overthrow, not contribute to status quo or be a prostitute for dope. Just know I may seem mean, be keen on discipline, but you won't always be this little kid. Has your Baba ever lied to you? Complain about his life to you? I'll die for you. All I ever do is fight for you. I apologize to you for bringing you up in a broken home. More and more reasons why this devil must be overthrown. You might hear some things about me, some lies and some truth. Come here, let me hug you. Your Baba loves you. Your daddy loves 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 you. Your Baba loves you. Some comrades don't want children. I don't blame them. All this mayhem, all this playing, complaining. Did we have a child that have a plaything? We should be raising our babies to be better, regardless of whether we're together or not. This got my stomach in knots. The thrill has gone, but the love has not. Try to get custody, but was denied and tricked when she sick that judge on me, accusing me of violence. Child support arrears, court appearance. By the time I see you, I'm broke, holding tears with just old pictures and souvenirs. The father that claimed another child is his. All the good fathers out there, they have no idea. Railroad, it seems like my girls don't like me. My sons wanna fight me, I just wanna do the right thing. Try not to be bitter, I'm not a quitter, too bad. Seems we were cool until mommy got a new man. I'm trying not to lose my cool, understand, and just leave it at one day you'll understand. Your daddy loves you. Your Baba loves you. Your daddy loves you. Your Baba loves you. Your daddy loves you. Your Baba loves you. Your daddy loves you. Your Baba loves you.